Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Ohio Exopod. I am going to be talking today about our biggest problem on the Earth, the biggest overt problem, which is our overpopulation bomb. The world's population will double and triple very rapidly unless this uncontrolled procreation comes to an end. We have some interesting statistics that come from the Future of Mankind site. Talks about 1993, every second, three humans were born, every minute, 180 humans, every hour, 10,000. Every day, 259,000 humans born. Every week, almost 2 million. Every month, almost 8 million. Every year, according to this, 94 million. That was in 1993. 1994, these statistics, I guess we could argue with them or against them. Every second, six humans are born. Every minute, 360 humans are born. That's beyond my wildest imagination. One every hour, 21,000. Every week, 518,000. Every day, 518,000. Every week, 3.6 million. Every month, 15.7 million. Every year, 189,000. So the number of people being born, it's just staggering. The statistics, who knows what it is in 2017? I do not have any numbers on that. But that's the gigantic overpopulation bomb that's going on. So, as all these people enter the earth, we have to clear more and more forests. And the forests are very, very important to the weather. They moderate the weather. They do all kinds of amazing things. So these storms that we're getting, like Hurricane Harvey, are in some ways related to overpopulation. And in fact, you could see this is one of the things that the Maya prophecies told us would increase are these hurricanes, including the fires. And there are some really bad fires that are going on again out west. Haven't been covering it, but I should. August 27th, 2017, Hurricane Harvey, I think it started then. Right now it's the 4th of September, and it's really currently active. It made landfall in Texas. It is a Category 4 hurricane. This is the first major hurricane to make landfall in the United States since 2005. It's dumped a total of almost 52 inches of rain in various areas in Texas. It holds the record for the highest precipitation total for a tropical cyclone in the contiguous United States. The sustained winds of 110 miles an hour, gusts of wind up to 140 miles per hour. The drone footage will show you water in some areas that's 12 feet deep. I've heard estimates of $40 billion worth of damage, perhaps more. Because as more and more people enter the earth, we get deforestation and the resulting overpopulation. Deforestation is the clearing of the earth's forests on a massive scale, which results in damage to the land. Forests still cover maybe 30% of the world's land area, but gigantic areas are lost each and every year. So the Earth, one of these creational natural laws that we study, says that the Earth should have about 529 million people on it. We have, who knows at this point, 9 billion, close to 9 billion, I'm thinking. And research indicates that the forests moderate the weather. They promote rain through the turbulence that's created when the wind blows across the surface of the trees. Climates in areas with forests tend to be more stable. From the research I've done, in general, there's a close correspondence between climate and vegetation. The major effect of a blanket of vegetation is to moderate daily climatic changes, such as changes in temperature, humidity, and wind. How do the forests promote warmth? Well, they don't reflect back nearly as much heat and light as do snow and ice surfaces. So the low albedo of forests means that they absorb the incoming solar radiation, which can make the ground and the air warmer. So that's one way the forest can help. When it starts to become cold in the winter, these forests tend to hold in heat, and that energy that's transferred from forests to the surrounding air is sometimes called sensible heat, and involves a change of this temperature. So in deforested areas, there's a higher albedo, so this heat is reflected back. And the destruction of forests causes extremes in the weather. So if you have deforestation, there'll be a patchy landscape of fragmented forest. And these fragmented forest areas are prone to danger, prone to fire, to damage by wind. And they tend to result in a harsher climate. Another thing that forests do long term is they uptake the CO2 out of the atmosphere, which can result in a net cooling. So it's this very complicated. In some ways they make it cooler, in some ways they make it hotter. So I think overall they tend to stabilize our climate, forests do. So as we grow our population larger and larger and larger, we tend to clear the forests, and then you're going to have these increasing hurricanes, increasing storms, increasing fires. It's not good at all. So, and I've been listening to this fella, Edward Albert Meyer out of Switzerland, who's been warning us for many decades about this. According to the Meyer information, the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer is on a mission here on the earth as what's called the universal prophet. And each universe brings forth a universal prophet who is repeatedly having material lifetimes in order to help speed up the evolution on the earth. And the evolution that we're talking about is the conscious evolution of human beings, the evolution of our consciousness. So the Nokedamian spear form has made it through all the levels of evolution. There are 7 steps that human beings go through: primitive life, rational life, intelligent life, real life, life in creational wisdom, kind of, and also the 6 stages, kind of a half spiritual, half physical stage. And then we spend many billions of years, or let's just say billions of years, I'll just leave it at that, and these spiritual planes that begin with the first level called Arahat Athrasada. So this spirit form has had lives on other worlds. For example, 9.6 billion years ago, the spirit form that is now in Edward Albert Meyer incarnated someone called Nokedamian, who lives on a planet named Sadar, that was in a galaxy called the Lyran Galaxy, which was some 3 billion light years away. And this, I don't think this galaxy even exists still. So here on the Earth, we're slowly forming what's called a collective subconsciousness. And knowledge can be passed to human beings via this collective subconsciousness. And this is very important because I think much of the Meyer information, and this is purely my speculation, initially will be passed through the collective subconsciousness. So the information that I'm talking about in this show now, that people will listen to in the archives, it won't so much be passed on consciously as subconsciously in many ways. But the people that are interested in this, the people that are now learning this stuff, will have a great impact on the humans around them through their thinking, through the power of their thoughts, through their neutral positive perspectives. Now, all these contacts with these extraterrestrials that Billy has had, contacts with Sunyase, Ptah, Quetzal, Sthoth, these are people that are in the Henoch-Nokodamian line, the same lineage. And this line of Henoch is mentioned in some of the earlier contacts with Sthoth. So the spiritual teaching, which was originally the teaching of Nokodamian and Henoch, were also teachings of the former personalities of Edward Albert Meyer, the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Now, there was another individual, by the way, there were, I believe, four different Henoch with H-E-N-O-C-H. And there was a Henoch with a K. There was also a Semyasa in this line. There were actually two Semyasas. We don't know which exactly was in the line of Nokodamian. There's a Semyasa 1 who was here 389,000 years ago during the time of the Lyrians. He fathered the first Adam. Then there was a Semyasa 2 who is sometimes referred to as a demigod. And he was here during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And he fathered what's called the second Adam. So there are two Adams on the earth. This information is talked about more in Contact Report 9. So other people in this lineage include Henoch, the first, second, third, and I believe there was a fourth. Henoch is where the Henoch prophecies come from. And at the time that Henoch was here, the North Pole was very unusual. It was a place of a wondrous climate with tropical vegetation and oranges and apples and all kinds of fruit trees. And it was a climate very similar to present-day Florida. And that information is mentioned in Contact Report 39. Eliah, also known as Elijah, known as the lover of creation, he was flown to Srinagar, Kashmir in India on a beam ship. It was interesting that Eliah wrote about Billy as the coming prophet. He said, "He will be a seeing and a knowing one, a mediator, whose hand writes down the words of those who will come from the stars. And he will be the third one to follow me. And he will be the continuation of the living again of those prophets who were before me." Then there was Yezaiah, known as the creational healing one, with Ishwish healing, who was born in 772 BC. And then the person we call Jeremiah, also known as the one raised by the gods, Socrates and Aristotle were all in this same line. And then Emmanuel, who today we unfortunately call Jesus, even though there was no letter J at that time in the ancient world. You could argue that his name was Yeshua or Iesus or Emmanuel, but you can't even argue logically that his name is Jesus, although everyone calls him Jesus today. Then after Emmanuel came Muhammad, whose teachings have been very distorted, and the history around him has also been distorted. He was a prophet very much like Emmanuel and Isaiah and the others before him. Galileo Galilei, born in 1564, was an astronomer, physicist, an engineer, a mathematician, also a member of this Nicodemian line, and another former personality of Edward Albert Meyer. Also Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was a former personality of Edward Albert Meyer. Mendelssohn, widely known as Felix Mendelssohn, German composer, a previous personality of Edward Albert Meyer. The person called Rasputin, a Russian peasant, a mystical faith healer, was another former personality of Edward Albert Meyer. So we here on Earth are building a we form in the material subconsciousness, a kind of spiritual connectedness. And we here are our we form. We are connected with one another through thoughts and feelings, as well as through the subconscious. And as you nourish and cherish negative or positive thoughts and feelings, so they will strengthen themselves once they are called forth. And these thoughts, hopefully they'll be neutral positive, because they can strike other human beings, through which they will awake something resting in them that they can bring to effect. So your thoughts and feelings, at least for those who are influenced through your mental and feeling-based impulsations, have an effect on other people. Billy's first contact was with an extraterrestrial human being named Svoth, who was nearly 1,000 years old, that landed a strange silvery-colored pear-shaped craft in Switzerland, in northern Switzerland, about 1945, took young Edward Albert Meyer for more than one trip, taught him about his previous lives, taught him spiritual telepathy, also taught him many principles related to the spiritual teaching. One thing that the spiritual teachings talks about is true love as compared to artificial love. True love is effective love. It's a love that's based on you understanding your connection to all things. It's very stable. It's based on reverence. But false love tortures the human being. It's inherent. It has demands. And this false love that tortures the human being often causes us to go against our will. This is the wrong form of love. It's artificially created in order to fulfill emotional and wishful lusts. So we'd be better to cover the nakedness of our greed and search for true love. True love is a concentrated form of fine spiritual perception. It's not located in the power of a god, but it is located in the consciousness of a human being who learns this fine spiritual perception. It's never fickle. It's absolutely indestructible. This is true love. Artificial love is always directed according to the emotional needs of the human being and his libido. Another important concept taught in the book, The Way to Live, is the fulfillment of your duty to yourself. Always care for the health of your body, for your psyche. You need to challenge your body with exercise. One way to fulfill your duty to yourself is not to devote yourself to your passions. Do not run after your lusts or your vices and your addictions. As it says here, it says, the person who devotes himself to his passion finally runs through the smoldering desert, dying of thirst. If you do not fulfill your duty to yourself, you can even have suicidal thoughts. You should give yourself sufficient respect. Don't do hidden things that you might feel ashamed about later. Try to always speak the truth openly and unvarnished. And in other things I've read lately, he talks about it's necessary to be very plain about your thinking and in your speech, not to be diplomatic, but to be very open and plain. He also says, your clothes speak for yourself. Fulfill your duty to yourself. Don't let yourself become ragged. Don't lose confidence in yourself. If you want to live in fulfillment to your duty to yourself and the fulfillment of your own duty, then never let yourself be controlled by any desires. Also, you must never allow yourself to be controlled by the desire which often motivates you to play the shining lead role. Another thing to watch out for is boredom, which is the death of all initiative. You need to be a good and pleasant companion for yourself. Edward Albert Meyer is an 80-year-old man. He's living in Switzerland. He's living in northern Switzerland in a place called Hinterschmidt-Rudia, a tiny mountain village that's nestled among the pine forests and the mountains of northern Switzerland. He, as I said before, is known as the Universal Prophet. He has had extraterrestrial contact since about the age of 5 years old. He's had three major mentors, a man named Svath, a woman named Asket, and another woman named Semyase. Svath was an extraterrestrial human from a world called Era, a world very much similar to Earth, but inhabited by a group of people who are at the fifth stage of evolution. They have overcome war. They've not had war in 20,000 years. They can travel freely throughout the universe. They have no crime or disease on their planet. They live according to these creational natural laws, like I started the show out talking about population. Their planet is very Earth-like, and they have a population of about 529,500,000 million or so. It would do us all well to start living by these creational natural laws. I mean, it's one of the goals of the spiritual teaching. And I talked about love. Love is the highest form of love. I'm not talking about artificial love. I'm talking about love that radiates from creation. Love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. If you open yourself up to the love of creation and allow it to flow into you, you will feel a thankful gratitude and a joy. And Billy, as a young boy, would start to sense the love of creation. He would look up at a beautiful starry sky at night and see the light which the stars emitted, but he would talk about an invisible light, which he called the love of creation. And he also describes how nature, in its indescribable splendor, is the visible expression of the love of creation. And that every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love will forever be the purpose for our existence. And Semyase would tell Billy, love and wisdom go together, and the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. Creation is not a father, it's not a god. It is the universal consciousness. It is the driving force behind the evolution of our universe. It's neither good nor evil. But it does radiate love, but yet at the same time it has no personality. And the German has a term that the English does not have for this. The term is a Wesenheit. It's what that term refers to is that as the universal consciousness, the creation evolves, it evolves according to a schedule, not its free will. It will continue to expand for roughly 155 trillion years, during that time, it will continue to create human spirit forms. And it creates these human spirit forms in order to help it to evolve. Because one day, after all of your material lifetimes and all of your time in a half physical, half spiritual state, and then all of your time in these levels like Arhat Athrasada, you'll merge back with creation with all of your life experience. And creation will learn from the experiences that you have had. And that's kind of the law of love. So creation freely gives us life, but it does not interfere with our evolution. It will not rescue us. We function under the law of responsibility. The second law, after the law of love, is the law of striving. The law of striving says we all have to work. It's the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. Without striving, there is no happiness. And I always very often read what happens to people who are not striving properly, who are living for pleasure or just taking things too easy and not advancing. It says, to be without striving means an unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving, inhibited life, but inhibited striving, inhibited life bring inhibited evolution, stagnation, hopelessness, grief, confusion, irrationality, joylessness, cognitionless, unpeace, disharmony, lovelessness, resentment, lies, self-deceit. It goes on and on and on. So I would say this to myself, as well as everyone else, we need to get to work. Striving requires an expenditure of effort. It must be achieved through hard work. Striving is not simply dropped into one's lap. We have to strive to learn the Meyer material. We have to strive to earn money. We have to strive to do our duties to creation, to people. There are multifarious powers which work against the striving. They will manifest differently in your life at different times. And it's a part of natural law that there'll be this opposite pole positioned against the striving. There must always be a plus and a minus, a pro and a con, a negative and a positive. Together, these two poles produce a oneness. Striving is part of the oneness of life. Isn't it quite interesting the way these creational natural laws work together? Striving creates a oneness, the oneness of the negative and the positive. The oneness coincides with the law of love. And to be effective in your striving, you need to be harmonious in your thinking. What does that mean? Well, it means you're neutral positive in your thinking. A neutral positive thinker says, I am confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony. That's the law of harmony. Good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings will lead to good habits. You'll develop good habits and you'll do these productive things automatically. That's the law of harmony in action. And good habits will lead to good circumstances in your life. You are not the victim of circumstances. You have, through the power of striving, the power of love, and the power of harmony in your own spirit, the ability to overcome any circumstances that you're faced with. You're the master of your own destiny. You're the master of your own life. Constructive thoughts form a calmness. It is the nature of thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can be brought to fruition. And as you use the law of striving and the law of harmony and the law of love to bring these things into fruition, then you'll have the law of prosperity and abundance. Every life form, every human being has everything plentiful and abundant to be able to live and evolve. Unfortunately, if you don't live in the law of striving or the law of harmony, you're not going to experience the law of prosperity and abundance. And as we violate the creational natural laws, like laws associated to population, we will interfere with the laws of prosperity and abundance. Just like if you don't think neutral positively, it will screw up your striving. If you don't think neutral positively, it will mess up your love life. You see, all these principles and laws are interchangeable with each other. These are not the laws created up by the Meyer case. These are the laws of the universe, by creation. There is something called the creation spirit energy that interweaves throughout the entire universe. The universal consciousness is laced with this energy. It's an intelligence of its very own. It's not like human intelligence. This intelligence has the ability to bring forth life forms. This spirit energy enlivens everything, from bacteria, microbes, to human beings. Even the stones and the sand and the water have this spirit energy in them. Now you have this pure spirit energy in you as well. It flows throughout your body. It's from your spirit form. Your spirit form rests in the middle of your brain in an area called the superior colliculus. It's the part of you that never dies. It remains after birth. It's a minute part piece of creation. It comes into the body of the fetus at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. It's no larger than needlepoint, yet its energy spreads out over the whole body, inside and out. And when people die, the spirit energy is still in them for 3 hours, and that's why they can do organ donation. We have a spiritual consciousness. Which is similar in some ways to the electricity that's used to power machines or a light bulb. Now, when the spirit form comes into the human body the first time, its first incarnation, it's completely unknowing, it doesn't know anything. According to the book, The Psyche, most spirit forms, most human spirit forms here on the earth are 4 million years old. That means you've been reincarnating on the earth for 4 million years. This is an incredibly long time. You will incarnate into a physical body some 40 to 60 million years. Right thinking is very important because what the human being thinks radiates beyond his own aura and also influences the environment, such as people, animals, plants. Your radiated neutral positive thinking, your healthy thinking, your love, your wisdom, your discernment, all of this has a positive effect. If you radiate evil thoughts, such as worries and hatred, unsatisfaction, and so forth, it will have a boomerang effect on you. It will be hurled back to you, and those thoughts will strike us. They strike us back. Now, the same kind of thing happens with good thoughts, though, but when the good thoughts come back, they have a good effect. So your thought is interacting with the universe around you. That's how important your thoughts are. That's how important it is to pay close attention to your thought. Now your thoughts also affect your body. You know, they have effect on your intestines and the stomach and the organs and the nerve. You can have afflictions because of your incorrect thinking, gallbladder problems, headaches, nervous trembling, gastric ulcers. Your thoughts can turn your life into hell. So what we're looking for here is learning to control our thought, to keep us from having heart condition and stomach disorders, to keep our adrenal glands from being overstimulated. Now, the term God is very much confused here on the earth. There's no God in the universe the way the religions teach, the Heavenly Father kind of thing that judges you and all that. That is not the way things work in the universe. You are the master of your own destiny. You don't have to be submissive. You shouldn't be submissive. In some sense, you are God. You must heal your own thinking. You are responsible for yourself. Your thinking can make you ill, destroy, and annihilate. Your thinking can drive you to suicide. To that, the form of the thinking which drives the human being to self-destruction, the negative thinking. Thinking is a tremendous power which will form you into exactly what you think. The word God comes from an age-old foreign language and has nothing to do with the creation. The word God, from time immemorial, referred to people, human beings, that had great spiritual and consciousness-based powers and abilities resulting from them. They were able to master and accomplish things which remained denied to kings and emperors. These extraterrestrials were here on the earth in the ancient past. Because of their abilities, these human beings were consistently named gods or goddesses because they stood above the emperors and the kings here on earth. Those named gods were asked for advice by these and by the people alike and were revered as human beings with tremendous knowledge and spiritual as well as consciousness-based ability. Now, these gods eventually died off and they wandered off, but they remained in the memory of humanity as a whole. And we had clever leaders who seized upon these old lures and legends. And out of this arose the God concept that we have today in our religions. A God who was made responsible for all. And eventually, the same kind of thinking created a God who was responsible for all the evil. In the old Celtic times, in ancient times, the Celts revealed a Superman who was one of these gods. He was a god of the hunt. And he had these incredible spiritual and consciousness-based powers for the benefit of the people of the hunt. And this individual had two horn-like growths that came out of his skull. He was named Tubal. And he became the devil over time. His name was changed to the devil. And the religions seized upon this idea. So that's what we have now. We have religions based on misunderstanding. Now, the power of your thinking doesn't really come from the human being himself or herself. But the thinking is an impetus that does not come from you. It streams in the spirit and through your consciousness, coming out of the immeasurable expanses of space. So somehow our thinking, the power of our thinking, stems from the wealth of the spirit of the what's called the Ur-life of the creation. And the creation is responsible for all life in the universe. For the human being, this mysterious Ur-life, the creation, embodies the actual breath of life, which is universally given to all. So, I've read just a few passages here and there from the book called The Psyche, which is an extremely important book that I recommend that you get. It will help you in many, many ways. We've also looked at some passages from The Way to Live. I wanted to just read a few words from the might of thoughts. So your thoughts, if they're not steered, if you allow your thoughts to what's called drift on the boat of thoughts, then these thoughts can become very dangerous. So you need to learn to steer your thoughts. We all need to learn to steer our thoughts for this reason. Let me just read this quickly. Then, as a rule, also bound with that are unconscious thought processes through which the feelings are unconsciously steered and are kept strong or weak. And naturally, also emotions can manifest in this way. So there's unconscious thoughts as well as conscious thoughts that you need to be aware of. It's the unconscious thoughts. Sometimes they get you. Unconscious. The unconscious is the part of the psyche that's lying before the consciousness. It's like a clerical assistant. It takes in impulses, perceptions. So the unconscious, like if you put your hand on a hot stove, then you'll pull your hand back. That's all done unconsciously, automatically. So there's conscious thoughts as well as unconscious thoughts. And these are two of the things that we're dealing with here on the earth. So, well, I hope some of these thoughts and these concepts will be useful to you as you go on from day to day. I thought I would cut it a little short today and just share a few concepts with you. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Thanks for listening.